Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Don't be afraid. Yeah, I turned on TV this morning. Oh my God, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. Oh, what a lockdown at the DC Naval Yard. Because I guess somebody dropped a book on a table. If you hear something, say something. So it's like 9/11 all over again, dude, because somebody thought they heard a gunshot today. And CNN, they ain't quit crying about it since. They're still freaked out. It's been a good hour and a half, maybe two, since the all clear. All clear, turns out it's a misunderstanding. Oh my God, really? A misunderstanding? Here's our FBI expert to tell us how much danger we're all in. You know, for people like you and me, who pay so much attention to the news all the time, it can be interesting to kind of take the temperature of some of the normals in our lives and find out what it is that they think and fear. And I heard a funny anecdote like that this morning where a friend of a friend had said, "Oh my God, this July 4th, apparently, you know, the ISIS is going to come here and they're going to cut off a lot of people's heads." And they've been doing that lately, you know. Yeah, but you know what? We've got this shark-infested moat called the Atlantic Ocean. It sort of protects us from head-chopping crazies who, despite America's best efforts, still don't yet have a beachhead right on the Mediterranean shore. Maybe soon enough. But then they still got to get through Gibraltar, across all the sharks, and the American force for good, protecting all we hold dear back home. The U.S. Navy. So, yeah, probably don't panic. Probably, just because TV said, be frightened of something, maybe you, actually, what if you took it the opposite way? What if you finally grew cynical about government and media pronouncements about how afraid you should be of things? Think all the times the bird flu, the SARS, the Ebola, and all the rest of them didn't kill everybody. Remember that time SARS didn't kill everybody? I know. Next time they try to scare you with one of those, hey, maybe don't believe them. Remember the dozens and dozens and dozens and hundreds probably of fake orange alerts and bogus entrapment plots, you know, terrorism plots run by the FBI in this country? Maybe next time they tell you to be afraid, they'll be lying too. Or maybe not, but maybe you should presume them dishonest instead of honest. And see, the thing is about the friend of the friend, this is a passive consumer of news. This is an American who understands news the way most Americans understand news. It just kind of goes by and they pick up on little bits of it, but they're not really reading up on it, right? And so, if you've been reading up on it, then you know that the feds have admitted that they have no information to suggest that there's going to be a terrorist attack on July the 4th, Independence Day weekend in this country at all. But their imagination tells them that it could happen. They have no information. Nothing to suggest there's going to be a terrorist attack. But hey, they can't help but raise the possibility that there could be, because after all, a lot of people are going to be outside celebrating together in large numbers this weekend, aren't they? It's the terrorist in the mind of every FBI agent coming up with this stuff, you know? It's just right there at their fingertips. Well, geez, what would I do if I was a terrorist, they say to themselves. Well, I'd blow up this, 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 and that. They know exactly what they would do, because they are a bunch of terrorists. If I was entrapping some idiot, not by focusing on his religion, but by focusing on American foreign policy in the region, which is how they do it, what event would I get him to target? The FBI agents ask themselves. And anyway, so yeah, there's that. On the other hand, and I'm going to have him on the show on Monday to talk about this new article. I'm going to run it on antiwar.com over the weekend. There's this article by Shea Machine Riley here at liberty.me. The ugly truth about ISIS, the new era of global terrorism. And he's pointing out that, hey, a lot of these attacks lately are not looking like FBI put-up jobs, but are actually just lone wolf attacks. We've gotten the thing to such the terror war over there to such a fever pitch, and with the communications tool of social media, it's a whole new day for terrorist recruitment for lone wolves, as they call them, who haven't been a problem really up until now, to go ahead and take their own initiative. And so, in other words, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and America has fulfilled it. We got to fight them over there so we don't fight them here. We got to fight them over there so we don't fight them here. And yet, all we do in fighting them over there is make it more likely that we'll have terrorist attacks here, not less. Guess what? That's how we got into this in the first place. George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton bombed and murdered and starved and killed in support of the Israelis and their exact same carbon copy policies. You know, mini-me. I'm not sure who's mini-me, America or Israel, but either way. That's what got us attacked in the 1990s and leading up to September 11th. And foreign policy since then, as Michael Scheuer put it in 2004, and it's still, you know, perfectly apt today, America's foreign policy is bin Laden's indispensable ally. As the great Jeff Huber, I'm so sad that that guy died. I think he just got pneumonia or something, and maybe the hospital just didn't, I don't know, take care. He's only in his 50s, man. I don't know. I think it was pneumonia. Same thing happened to J.D. Cash. He was way too young to die too, man. Anyway, Jeff Huber wrote this article, Osama bin Laden, dead and loving it. What the hell does he care if he's dead or not? He accomplished everything he ever set out to accomplish and more by about a factor of 1,000. Here this guy moves massive armies, the greatest armies in history across the planet with his will. He just, he works the North Americans like puppets on a string. Oh, they think they're smart. They think they're taking advantage. They're doing everything that he wanted them to do, and then things he couldn't imagine them doing. Actually, if Osama was really smart, he would have worked harder to try to frame up Iran on the 9/11 attack. He'd probably want to see them go as bad as the Saudi kingdom. It's hard to have an Islamo-fascist caliphate with a giant Shiite Persia in the way. All right. Cool. So Robert Naiman's going to be on the show. He's going to give us an update on the flotilla. There's flotilla news, man. God dang Israelis, man. The government, I mean, not all the people of the country. Give me a break. And Judge Napolitano, of course, is going to be on the show. Not of course, for the first time ever. Is going to be on the show to talk about his new article that's running at Lou Rockwell and antiwar.com today. It's a spot at antiwar.com today. Very important information in Hillary Clinton's emails about covert action in Libya and Syria and perjury before the American Imperial Senate. Hey, Hillary Clinton, man, I'm telling you what. Interesting that her perjury was in response to a question by Rand Paul, a pseudo-possible opponent of hers in the general, in theory at least. So we're going to talk with Judge Napolitano for just a few minutes. He's a very busy guy. Coming up a little bit later on the show. And actually, I still got a couple more invites out too, so you never do know, really. Hang tight. Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott. Yeah, it's my show, man. The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, join up the chat room, man. ScottHorton.org/chat. Got our good group of people in there, like usual. Everybody but Fitzy G, where are you, Fitz? ScottHorton.org/chat. It's also a free node, IRC free node chat room. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. If you want to hang out with the folks in the place. Oh, whoops. I meant to say great thanks to this dude. Great thanks. Cool. Poor guy sitting there wondering if I still mean or not. Let's see. Weiss can't do it. Naaman, yes. Oh, David. Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I've been looking at Twitter all break long instead of my email, and now I'm doing my email live on the show because that's how it works. Cool. So we're going to actually interview not Robert Naaman, but instead a guy named David Heap from the Canadian boat to Gaza. So very cool. Oops, I guess I should say. On air. Can you get him for me? That would be nice. Okay, cool. Hey, so yeah, I said what I want to say about the stupid terrorism thing on July 4th. Enjoy your Independence Day, man, and don't be afraid of this stupid ISIS. And you know what? Maybe there's some copycat idiot out there, but these guys haven't been very effective in their terrorist attacks anyway. And, you know, if you're really afraid, carry a gun. Somebody tries to explode, just shoot him in the face. And I don't mean for playing with firecrackers. I mean for, you know, if it's a pro-Islamic State terrorist or something, you know. But yeah, not really something to worry about. Here's something that might be more important to take on board for Independence Day. America is the British Empire. Worse. America is the global hegemon. The American people owe it to the rest of the people of the world to do everything that we can to force our government to recognize their independence. The Afghans, the Pakistanis, the Yemenis, the Somalis, the Libyans, the Syrians and Iraqis, the Ukrainians. And those are just the worst of the spots. But hell, read Nick Turson, weep for Africa and the recolonization of the so-called dark continent there. What are we doing? And I know it ain't we, it's them, our state, our government, the politicians and the special interests. But still, sort of, kind of, we had the ability to stop them. If the American people had a real consensus that, we're anti-imperialists, then that would be it. I'm not saying I really believe in democracy and all that, but it's just like the great Ron Paul says, even in the Soviet Union, even in a totalitarian communist dictatorship, if the people decide they're sick and tired of it and they refuse to stand for it anymore, watch. Just evaporates. They get, I mean, not necessarily every time is it that easy, but the people get what they want. That's the point. And if the people insisted that, your national security strategy for 2011 or whatever is not what America is about, We're Declaration of Independence folk here. That is our creed. That is what we believe in. That's what makes us Americans, of all the different descriptions we have for ourselves and each other. We believe in natural rights. We believe that a prince whose every act is thus marked in a... every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to rule free people. Right? I said it wrong because I haven't read it in a long time and I screwed it up. But it doesn't matter because you know what I meant. America has no right to rule. Isn't that simple and easy? How can we have such consensus in this society for an abject betrayal of all that we still claim to believe in? The principles of the Declaration. And is it really as simple as, oh, be afraid because somebody might explode you? Is it really as simple as, oh, we're exceptional, so when we commit sins, they become virtues by the fact that we're the ones committing them, see? Is it really that easy to get adult human beings to continue to go along with this madness? And which is so obviously to our own detriment. Never mind the poor, you know, what are they, you know? One-fifth human beings out there on the other side of the water from here, that whose lives we don't have to consider. What about us? What about the police state here? What about the national debt? What about our inflationary money and boom-bust cycle that's all necessary to support the empire? What about your local deputy sheriff is now trained like some kind of Navy SEAL or Delta Force paramilitary killer? Because actually he just got back from over there where that's what they do, night raids. Night after night. And now he's your deputy sheriff. Hey, it's Independence Day, guys. Celebrate. Set the world free. How about that? Read Bill Kristol and Robert Kagan and explain to yourself why that just ain't right. I don't know. Why should it be hard? And the thing is about it is I know most people, they don't want another Iraq war. People are kind of more or less anti-war now, but they'll still support a war. They didn't give a damn when Obama launched a war against Libya. War against Libya? Nobody even cared. One way or the other. Now, they were against the one in Syria, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe just because the email went out to right-wing talk radio hosts that we're against this one. Maybe Rush was against it. They all fell in line behind that. I don't know what it was that created such a conservative consensus against the Syria war in 2013. The bombing raids over the bogus sarin attack. Well, real sarin, but bogus in the accusations of its origin is what I meant. So people. What the? Oh man, it's bust. Man, this thing's busted. The light was on, but the air was dead. So what I was trying to say is, yeah, people, they care, but not enough. It's not their highest priority, not by a long shot. And hell, I guess as long as TV can tell you, the FBI says, be terribly afraid for the safety of your picnic, then whatever, you'll support dropping nuclear bombs on people, right? Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'll Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks. All right, so here's the thing, man. I had this fantasy back in the 08 and 12 campaigns that Dr. Ron Paul would adopt a strategy of not just education, but really, really trying to win, and seeing it from my perspective that the only way to do that in a Republican Party of 2008-2012 would be to just say nuts to the Republican Party, calling all Americans, Republican, Democrat, all religions, all age groups, town and country, and non-voters, especially people who don't participate, don't care most of the time. Now is our chance to limit the power of the corrupt evil empire that's destroying our society. No more bailouts, no more wars, full-scale restoration of the Bill of Rights. That's the platform. We're doing it. Everyone, it doesn't matter, register Republican, bum rush the primary, and let's go ahead and do this thing. Change the entire game. Running as the perfect center, but not as a so-called moderate extremist like McCain, who's for every insane fascist thing that the government could possibly come up to do, but that unifying center of libertarianism, where we're better than the best of the right on the things they're good on, and better than the best of the left on the things that they're good on. So if you want peace and sound money, blam. Come on, everybody, bum rush the primary. I mean, you're talking about major states where you got maybe 20,000 people vote in the primaries out of populations of millions. But a determined campaign like that to just change the entire game and just insist that regular people who usually don't participate put the Bill of Rights first. For Christ's sake, or your kids won't have even the slightest bit of it left. That maybe then he could have got the nomination. It would have just been if he could have gotten that message across. If his campaign people, if his TV ad people weren't running ads going, "Don't you hate Mexicans?" and a bunch of whatever horrible TV ads that they made for his campaign. If they'd run it like that, then maybe. Could he have ever gotten the money to beat Obama in the general? Nah. You need a lot of money for that, and Obama had the whole establishment locked up for that. But anyway, here's my whole thing. The reason I say that is because, well, that's what I think Rand Paul could do too. And he keeps reaching out to blacks on civil rights issues, criminal justice issues. Well, that's basically saying screw you to the conservative Republican Party that are perfectly happy to have a criminal justice system exactly the way we have it. He's undermining his own base by trying to do the right thing and reach out to people outside the Republican Party on that issue. So, same lesson applies. Don't run to the right. Run to that libertarian, anti-everything center. and appeal never mind just across parties into the Democratic Party, but to all Americans, calling all Americans in every state of every description. You want peace in the Bill of Rights or not? Your choice is Republic or Empire. Choose Republic. It's your last chance. Vote Rand. Simple, to the point. I need all 300 million Americans to get on board for this thing. Oh, except, of course, the national government's employees, who can all go drown themselves in a lake when we're done kicking their ass right out of power. But for the rest of you, oh, and, you know, the military-industrial complex and the bankers and the insurance companies and agribusiness in Israel. But other than that, the people of the country versus them. Oh, and I always leave out oil, but why? It's not a favor to oil. I just forget when I go down my list in my brain. It's just oil, oil. But you know what? I was saying that to Eric Garrison. He goes, I got another way that Rand Paul could win. Donald Trump. He's a billionaire. And he don't give a damn. And so look at how well Ross Perot was doing back in 92 before he quit. He was doing really good. And, you know, my argument for Jeb, all things being equal, why it's, you know, Jeb is the shoe-in candidate here on the Republican side and then against Hillary, too, that could actually be rendered moot by a player like, you know, I always say, unless he says the N-word in front of an open microphone about Jeb, right? Well, what about unless Donald Trump enters and spends hundreds and hundreds of millions and maybe even more on his own campaign and just completely tears out after Jeb and tries to destroy him in every way he can. The rest of the entire Republican field are a bunch of boobs and nobodies and nincompoops. I mean, give me a break. Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum and Bobby Jindal and Marco Rubio. I mean, these guys are pathetic. They're pathetic. So if Trump comes in there and just starts slaying everybody, he might leave Rand as the last man standing kind of thing in a way. And now, don't let me paraphrase Eric Garrett's wrong here, because he did say it's still a 1 in 100 chance. It's still almost, you know, statistically inconceivable. But, meh. And then under those conditions, I guess it doesn't matter whether he does my idea, which is to try to appeal to all Americans, Republic or Empire. This is your last chance. Bill of Rights or no Bill of Rights, this is your last chance. You know, Andy Griffith or the Navy SEALs for your local police department. This is your last chance. Everyone. That's my strategy. Liberty. Uncompromising. Campaign for Liberty. That's how to do it. Eh. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, I don't know a lot about Donald Trump, honestly, but I mean, he's been around my whole life. He's been on TV, you know. He's a person that I'm well aware of. And if there's one thing that I think I understand about him, it's that he don't give a damn. Right? He's not blackmailable in any way. Because go ahead and say the worst thing about him. He don't care at all. And he's got a lot of money. And I don't know who all are his close friends and business associates and what all banks he's very close to because of the great terms that they've given him in the past and whatever, these kinds of things. These are very important questions, and I don't know the answers to them. But he seems like such an arrogant bastard that, well, I don't know. It's like Lou Rockwell's writing over at the Political Theater. What fun to watch this guy just come in there like a bull in the china shop and just ruin everything for everybody who deserve to have it ruined for them. You know, they're horrible. And by the way, and we're going to find out more about this later on in the show. When we talk to Judge Napolitano, but I've been telling you for a long time, and I stand by it, Hillary Clinton is toast, man. And she may very well get the nomination. I don't doubt that, because I don't think the Democrats have anybody who can beat her, as far as that goes. But, again, there would have to be some real hijinks on the Republican side for her to win at this point. She is just so ridden with scandal, and is just so unlikable to so many people. She's badly yesterday's news, and I think she knows it too. That's why so many different Democrats are starting to get into the race against her, even though they probably figure she'll win. They do what they can. Take a chance.
Hey, y'all, guess what?
You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Scott, it's my show, Scott Horton Show. Coming up, what's his name? I don't know, Robert Naiman's friend about the flotilla. Very important news there about Israel-Palestine coming up. And then Judge Napolitano, man, he's got the goods on Hillary. Anyway, so yeah, all that coming up. Now, get to that in a second here. Let me just blast through some news for you here. Russia's Gazprom halts Ukraine gas shipment over lack of payment. Oh, don't worry. You can afford to pick up the tab for them, so it's not going to be a problem. American aid to Russia is aid that we give directly to... blew my own damn punchline. I'm so stupid and bad at this. American aid to Ukraine... is all to go directly into the bank accounts of big business in Russia. Hey, we got to pay off Russia for Ukraine. Got to pay off the enemy so they'll keep selling us gas. What a mess. Nearly 200 killed in massive ISIS offensive against the Egyptian military dictatorship in the Sinai Peninsula. Enormous death tolls are coming out of northern Sinai as ISIS forces launch a wave of attacks backed by rocket fire and car bombings against Sinai security forces loyal to the Egyptian junta. They centered around the town of Sheikh Zayed. That's Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. That Islamic State, it's a pretty weak state, but it's one badass terrorist group now. And look how easy it is for goofballs here, there, and the other place, all over the place, to just declare themselves loyal to ISIS and then start shooting cops. It's happening all across North Africa and the Middle East right now. In Saudi and Kuwait, of course, in Iraq and Syria. In Sinai, you got Salafist, ISIS claimed groups poking their head up in the Gaza Strip. Now, the history of that is Hamas kills those guys dead. Anytime bin Ladenites have poked their heads up in the Gaza Strip, Hamas has quickly dispatched them. But I guess it depends where they're getting their money and their guns from and how powerful they are. I don't know. Elliot Abrams tried to arm up Fatah against Hamas and it blew up in his face, so I don't know. But anyway, point being, there are huge factions in Libya now claiming the Islamic State. It's that easy, right? This is all they got to do. Hoist the flag, the black flag. And yes, it is all Obama's fault, but no, not because he got the troops out of Iraq, because of his highest of high treason in Libya and Syria, taking the side of the veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2011 and ever since. Well, not so much ever since in Libya, through September 2012 in Libya. I think we've been supporting secular fascists there since then. But in Syria, still supporting the suicide bomber, prisoner beheader, those who still swear their loyalty to Ayman al-Zawahiri. And now, man, they've spread bin Ladenism hither and yon. You know, George Bush's propaganda actually, I mean, I guess at one point he said, yeah, they want to create a caliphate from Spain to Indonesia. And so that's about as far-fetched as you could possibly get, but boy, this is a hell of a lot closer to that than I could have ever imagined coming true. It's just crazy. In fact, if you Google that, from Spain to Indonesia, you'll find a blog entry I wrote at antiwar.com 10 years ago saying they will never create a caliphate, not even in Western Iraq, because the tribal leaders still rule over the bin Ladenites. So quit lying. But I guess I just couldn't have anticipated that. Just wait till the Democrats come. They're going to take the side of Osama's legions in Syria. And they're going to build up Al-Qaeda in Iraq to such a state that it rules all of Iraqi Sunnistan. If I came from the future and told myself that, I guess I would have believed it then, maybe. But other than that, come on. How can he be on the side of the bin Ladenites, man? They're the bin Ladenites. Oh, because Israel says so. Oh, okay. Yeah, by the way, here at news.antiwar.com, ISIS vows to oust Hamas, impose Sharia law in Gaza. Oh, that's funny. Benjamin Netanyahu says Hamas is ISIS. They're all the same thing. Get it? They're Arab Muslims. And so, what more do you need to know than that? Nothing. But, yeah, nope, sorry, they're deadly enemies. And by the way, I don't know if I have it in my Iraq section or not, so let me just get to it right now. It's on the page today at antiwar.com. 4,777 killed in Iraq during June. 4,777. That's counted up by the great Margaret Griffiths at antiwar.com/updates. You can take that to the bank. Any caveats necessary would be included in her writing. Antiwar.com/updates. Those are 2007 level numbers right there. That's as bad as Iraq War II ever got. Somewhere around there. Going on there again right now. Alright, so that's that. I told you about the Yemen prison break. Let me tell you about, what time is it? Oh, man. Listen, let me tell you about this. Where is it? Yemen is starving, and we are partly to blame. No, the U.S. Empire is 100% to blame. America and Saudi are starving the people of Yemen. They import 90% of their food, and America has them under a total blockade and is helping the Saudis bomb the hell out of them. They import 90% of their food, and America has cut them off from the global market. 80% of the country's population, according to the UN, badly need emergency supplies of food and water, or they're going to die. Because of the cruelest force on the face of the planet Earth, our government. The American Empire, the ruthless butcher of tiny, helpless children. And you know what? Yeah, I know, I'm from here too. What, you're from here, so that can't be true? They're the worst people in the whole world. The American national security state. Look what they do. Look what they do. When they know good and damned well that the people of that country are helpless. Man, it's, it's the Somalia situation all over again, really. When Bush supported the, really encouraged, not encouraged, twisted the arms of, orchestrated, arranged for the Ethiopian invasion of Somalia back in 2006 on Christmas Day. Helped celebrate the resurrection of baby Jesus and all that by slaughtering a bunch of helpless men, women, and children. Christians. Oh, no, Muslims. For Christians. Hiring a Christian army to invade on Christmas. That's what it was. Anyway. Well, Muslims revere Jesus, too. Anyway, so, yeah, man, same thing again. What they're doing in Yemen right now. I wonder how many hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people will be dead by the end of this war. You know, according to FuseNet, which is an NGO supported by the U.S. and U.K. governments that keeps track of famine deaths in the world, almost 700,000, 600 and a half, right? 650,000 something Somalis starved to death in 2010 and 11. 11 to 12. And that was all because, not just the horrible drought, but because America had completely smashed their country into a million little pieces. So there were no markets. Whoever was able to even plant a crop and was able to actually harvest the thing in the face of the weather and the war had no way to get it to market because there was no market. There was no road and no one had any money to buy anything. Because of what the American Empire had done to them. So they just laid down and died, 600-something thousand of them. Most of them, of course, children under the age of 5 years old. Murdered at the hands of Barack Obama. Now he's doing it again in Yemen. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, Al Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. On the line, I've got David Heap from the Canadian boat to Gaza. That is the Freedom Flotilla. Freedom Flotilla 3, I believe it is now. Welcome to the show, David. How are you doing?
Good to be here, Scott. Glad to thank you for having me on the show.
Sure thing. Very happy to have you here. Appreciate you joining us, especially on short notice like this. So can you please tell us what is the latest news? I guess we can get into a little bit of background later, but first of all, just what's the breaking news of the flotilla there in the Mediterranean?
So as of early Monday morning, the Marianne, the ship from that had sailed around the coast of Europe from Sweden, was assaulted in international waters and illegally seized by the Israelis and 18 people on board. Kidnapped on the high seas in international waters, again, and a crime in international law. They were all taken against their will to the Israeli port of Ashdod. Some of them were expelled quickly, former Egyptian president, European member of parliament. Some of them wound up in jail for a while. Some journalists were also expelled quickly. As of today, the two Canadian participants are on their way home, and I'm off. We're off to meet them at the airport in Toronto, so we're happy to see Bob Lovelace of the Ardoch Algonquin First Nation and Kevin Nish, retired marine engineer from British Columbia, arriving today back home safely, finally. We're still concerned. There's six or seven people, six Swedes and, I believe, a Russian journalist who are still in detention in the Israeli prison at Givon, which is, you know, not a good place to be almost, what are we, 3 or 4 days later. And the word is they might not get out till the weekend, till Saturday or Sunday or maybe even Monday. The Swedes, some of them have been there before, and they don't want to leave anybody behind, so they want to go out as much as possible in groups rather than one at a time, because, of course, that's a safety concern for the people that have sailed together. They want to come out together. So that's the situation of the internationals that were on the flotilla. What we have to keep in mind is that the 1.8 million Palestinians in Gaza are still inside the world's largest open-air prison. And that's the real purpose of this this campaign, to shed the light of the world and the conscience of humanity, bring focused attention on the people that are the reason we're doing all of this, because, you know, they need to know that even though the governments of the world have turned their backs on them and ignored their plight, the peoples of the world, civil society organizations like ours, haven't forgotten them.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely of course, the real point here. But just on the details, once again, real quick, how many boats were there? And the others were just turned away after the first boat was seized? Or exactly how did that play out?
So
I'm sorry, I'm just behind on the news, honestly.
No, that's cool. That's fine. I'm just happy to bring you up to speed. So on Saturday, Saturday morning, there were four boats in the water. The Marianne that I just mentioned and three smaller boats that left ports in Greece to join her. The plan all along was for them to accompany her for a time so we'd have more internationals involved. We had people from many more countries involved in that stage. There were actually two other Canadians on another boat. The plan all along was for them to turn back before the encounter with the Israeli military, so that we would have some people who were getting out in time to talk to the media and bear witness to what had happened. Because, of course, the people that are inside don't get to talk to the world, right? And the Israeli government, the military forces, block all of the sat phones and all of the radio signals on the boats when this happens. So there's no chance to tell the world what's going on. So we wanted to have some people.
They lied initially, didn't they, the Israelis, and said, well, we just turned the boat back without incident, and they didn't say anything about boarding and seizing anyone.
Yeah. They originally just said visited and inspected without incident. But, I mean, what your listeners need to know is that first statement is almost always going to be a lie. I would assume when you hear a statement like that it's not truthful, because that's what an occupier does. They take people's rights. They take their lands. They take their lives and freedom in some cases, and they lie about it. As a matter of routine. So, I mean, when I was on a boat that was stopped 4 years ago, they said it was done peacefully, that stopping, and, you know, I was tasered, which isn't very peaceful to me. You know, we know that at least four of the Swedish crew were tasered the other morning when they were boarded, but, of course, the Israeli military lies about that because they try to control the message for the first 12 to 24 hours, as I say, by preventing the journalists on board from doing their job, by taking all of the recording equipment and all of the broadcasting equipment. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have some people who are able to tell the story, bear witness to what's going on, as I say, increase the amount of international involvement in the flotilla, because what people need to know is that these violent and illegal acts by the Israeli military aren't going to stop the international movement in solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. In fact, the movement's growing. We have, for the first time this time, we have people involved from South Africa and people from New Zealand. There was a Maori TV journalist crew on board. They just got back. The journalists just got back to New Zealand the other day. You know, so this movement is spreading and making more links between people-to-people organizations, even while governments like my government and the government in the States, one in Canada, one in the States, continue to give their support, unconditional support, to Israeli crimes.
All right. Now, as you know, it's the population of the United States, and I guess I probably assume Canada too, are just woefully ignorant about this subject. They couldn't imagine why somebody named David from Canada would have the slightest interest in what's going on in Gaza and working with people and getting on a boat and some kind of blockade against the terrorists or something. And what is this even about? Why do you even care, David? What is it?
So this is a crime of collective punishment against the civilian population, right? So this is illegal under international law for a long time, since the late 40s, the Fourth Geneva Convention. It says when an occupying power, which is what Israel is in Gaza, they occupy it even though their military isn't there every day. They surround it militarily. They control the airspace and the sea and almost all of the land access. They control everything about the economy and the infrastructure in Gaza. They control even the civil registry if you're going to get an ID card. So they're an occupying power in international law. That's very clear. They're supposed to guarantee a normal life to civilians under occupation, and that's what the Palestinians in Gaza have been losing for the last 8 years and counting of this blockade. They don't have freedom of movement to trade and travel. They're a coastal area. I mean, Gaza Strip is on the coast of the Mediterranean. They can't access their own sea. So when we sail, it's not about the stuff that we bring, the small amounts of aid that you can get on these small boats. It's not about, you know, a handful of internationals trying to get to Gaza. It's about bringing the world's attention to this blockade, which is a flagrant violation of, as I say, of international law and of the human rights of the Palestinians in Gaza. And it's done with the complicity of our government, right, especially the U.S. and the Canadian governments, who are giving political cover and diplomatic support to Israel to get away with, well, in some cases, murder. So nobody here was killed, but in 2010, nine Turks and one U.S. citizen were killed. And oddly enough, nobody investigated the death of Furkan Gogan from the U.S., right?
Yep.
So, I mean, these are crimes which are done with the support of your government in mind, and people need to be aware that this is our responsibility as well, that this is going to stop when our government stops supporting the Israeli blockade and the Israeli occupation. And so when we sail, you know, a small number of us in small boats in the Eastern Mediterranean, not a lot of people can get on board. They're small vessels, right? But a lot of people can get on board with this movement, wherever you are and whatever you do. Your lock of life, because we're really sailing against the government in Ottawa and the government in Washington. Right.
Well, okay. So tell us about that.
Minds in our country.
What can people do, David? What groups can they join? What URLs can they bookmark? How can they get involved and do something about this?
So you want to look for freedomflotilla.org in Canada. We're canadaboatgaza.org, which will redirect to tahrir.ca. In the U.S., you can look for U.S. Boat to Gaza, and you know, Just Foreign Policy has a petition right now calling on justforeignpolicy.org in the States, calling on John Kerry to, well, we were talking about free access for the flotilla, but more the fundamental issue is freedom of movement for the Palestinians of Gaza. So these are all civil society organizations in our respective countries that are working to influence people, not just politicians, but grassroots folks in our communities, to change their minds and help them understand that we are also responsible for what's happening there, and it's going to change when people change their minds here about what we want our governments to do.
Right on. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, David. I sure appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for having me. Hope to speak to you again.
All right, y'all. That is David Heap. He is at freedomflotilla.com. Also, check out the usboattogaza.com, and we'll be right back. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Coming up, Judge Napolitano is going to be on to talk about the criminality of our former Secretary of State, current Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Oh, yeah, she's a felon. Alleged felon. that's coming up on the show. It's the spotlight today on antiwar.com. You might want to take a look at it there, Ryan. Our previous guest mentioned Furkan Dogan. He was murdered by the Israeli so-called defense forces back in 2010, the first attempt of the Gaza flotilla to break the blockade and bring attention to the plight of the people of the Gaza Strip. An American citizen had already been shot. I forget if it was in the gut or in the back, and was already laying on the ground, helpless, unarmed, when the Israeli soldier shot him in the head, I want to say 9 times. Wasn't it 9 times at point blank range? And now I got to Google it. It's the only one that sounds right in my brain, but I don't see here now. I could be wrong. Furkan Dogan shot 9 times. Let's see if that's what comes up here. Furkan Dogan. 1 of 9. No. In the head, multiple times in the head, it says there. All right, wait. I'll take out 9 times, but then I'll add in the head. Times in the head. 4 in the head. 5 times. No, 4 in the head. Shot once and then 4 more in the head. Yeah, that's right. I was going to say 9 times in the head. That doesn't sound right. I'm going to blow his head clean off into hamburger meat with that. 4 times in the head, though. That'll destroy your head pretty good, too. After he was already shot and helpless laying on the ground. An American citizen, as our guest pointed out. All right. So I was wrong, but hey, I Googled it because I didn't think I was right. So I don't think that really counts as being wrong, does it? When I fix it live in real time while I'm screwing up? Okay, no. That's pretty good. And still, what difference does five bullets make at the point where he's already dead already? Why are you still shooting him in the brain, dude? All right, and the other thing is, I saw on CNN this morning some ridiculous propaganda about the Iran nuclear talks. This is the best argument that all their millions of dollars can put into a campaign. The deal will leave Iran's nuclear infrastructure intact. Oh, yeah? As opposed to what? A full-scale invasion by the American Army and Marine Corps? Under what deal or threat are the Iranians going to completely dismantle all that they've achieved under the Bush and Obama administrations in mastering the fuel cycle to enrich uranium to a measly 3.6% industrial grade for their electricity program? Yes, they'll still have centrifuges. Boo-hoo for you, liars, trying to pretend like that's some kind of threat to me or any American. And when any of us can just ask ourselves, so what's your proposal then, Israeli first traitors in America who put this crap on our TV to try to ruin these talks? You treacherous, treasonous Israeli fifth column in America. What is it that you want? War. That's the only answer. There is no good deal. Oh, this is a bad deal. We need a good deal. Oh, yeah? How are you going to get a good deal where the Iranians just get down on their knees so you can bend over so they can kiss your ass and tear their entire nuclear program to smithereens and give you access to inspect any of their military bases that you want forever? Give me a break. These people want war. And they're representing the interests of a foreign power, not America. And they suck at it. Oh, boo-hoo, they'll still have centrifuges. Cry me a river. You can't even make up a better lie than that for why I ought to be scared. Oh, they'll still have an electricity program. Yeah, I know. We all know that. They still will. So, now it'll be more inspected and more safeguarded than ever before by a long shot, and is being scaled back. The number of spinning centrifuges is being reduced by more than half. And anyway, facts don't matter. It's all a scaremongering campaign by people who put the interests of a foreign country before their own. Treacherous, treasonous Israel firsters. Led by AIPAC and the neocons at the National Review and the Weekly Standard and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and Fox News. And it's really disgusting. It really is treasonous. Oh, and by the way, I like this, though. In rebuke to Israel, State Department says it has no objection to BDS aimed at the occupation. Now, they're not saying they're supporting boycotting Israel altogether, but wow, really? That's still something, don't you think? Hey, the Israeli settlements, they're illegal, and as the White House's, as the U.S. government's official position has been since 1967, or whatever, since the settlements began, whatever the hell that was, this is counterproductive for peace. It's hard to give up land that you're occupying for the creation of a Palestinian state when you keep building colonies on it. But now, the State Department has officially said, I guess, oh, in effect, they've condoned boycott as a tactic. That's pretty good. That's at MondoWeiss.net today. And there's other good news along these lines, too, which is Michael Oren, you're familiar with him. I'm always playing that clip of him explaining why Americans should prefer Al-Qaeda to Iran, because that's what Israel wants, the former Israeli ambassador to the United States. And he's written this book making huge numbers of new enemies for the Israeli state out of liberal American Jewish Zionists. He's attacked Thomas Friedman and Leon Weitzelieder or Weitzelletter or whatever, however you say his name, the guy that used to be at the New Republic, and a whole lot of very prominent liberal Zionists, that is, Jewish American Zionists who support a two-state solution, who support Israel and think that a two-state solution rather than some kind of apartheid state that can't possibly last is preferable, since they want to keep Israel Jewish and democratic. And yet, Michael Oren, the Likudnik, is calling them all a bunch of anti-Semites and self-hating Jews and all this kind of crap that usually everybody else has to put up with from the likes of them, the New Republic, etc. And it's caused this huge split, and it's hilarious. And you can read all about it at MondoWeiss.net. They got all the great quotes out of all the different reviews there. Ron Campius at the Forward today makes mincemeat out of Oren as well.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica. And he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. It's fundraising time at the Scott Horton Show. Cost of living keeps going up. Cost of producing this show keeps going up. And so whatever you think your part is, you can play it at scotthorton.org/donate, scotthorton.org/raffle.
Also, check it out, man. I told y'all I did the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism. Well, right now it's ranking at number 22 in the nonfiction new releases at audible.com. So that's pretty good, right? So check that out. Fascism versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell, read by me. It's all about how libertarianism is right and conservatism and progressivism are terribly wrong. I think you'll like it. Fascism versus Capitalism. Check that out. Also, you can get it for free if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show first. Yeah. And you know, I got an email from a guy. He had to make a big purchase of computers, I guess, for his business. He went to scotthorton.org/Amazon first. Or he just went to scotthorton.org and clicked on the Amazon.com button. And then he bought all his computers that he needed to buy for his business. And so the show gets a little bit of a cut of that from Amazon's end of the sale. You don't pay more when you do that. They get paid less. So do that. Thanks very much. And more like that, please. Just stop by scotthorton.org/Amazon. Some of you guys just buy tons of stuff from Amazon all the time, or your wives do, or people you know, whatever. Tell them, hey, man, support this radio show I know. Click here first. scotthorton.org/Amazon. Yeah, there you go. And that's ways that money can come to the show. Oh, here's another way that I should emphasize. Advertise on the show. Some people like advertising on the show. Some people have found that their businesses have benefited from advertising on the show. Others not so much, but
hey, give it a try. Email me, scott@scotthorton.org, if you want to advertise. Believe me, my prices are extraordinarily reasonable. I don't even think they qualify as reasonable. They're better than reasonable, man. They're unreasonably good, is what they are. Unreasonably low, low, low. So let me know. Scott Horton. Oh, no. Scott@scotthorton.org is what I'm trying to say. All right, cool. Coming up, the judge. So don't go away. All right, so I did have a couple more things on Israel to mention, which is, first of all, the United Church of Christ votes to boycott and divest from companies profiting from Israel's occupation. And then, but I have to be honest with you, I don't know who that is. Is that Methodists? I do not know what denomination of Protestant Christians that represents. I'm reading the whole dang article here. I still ain't seeing it. Maybe it doesn't matter. Anyway, more and more like that, Protestant churches are divesting, boycotting either just the settlements or sometimes all of Israel at this point. Actually, I'm not sure if any of the churches have gone that far. But quite a few different church groups. The Presbyterians, before I know, have done this too. And finally, as James North and Philip Weiss write at MondoWeiss.net, finally, the New York Times acknowledges that, quote, a growing number of American Jews support BDS. And this has been a real bone of contention and something that they have really been complaining about at the Mondo Weiss site for a while and trying to get, you know, corrections made or, you know, a new policy instituted there at the New York Times that you guys can't just keep pretending that this is some kind of anti-Semitic movement or let people on one side pretend that without showing the fact that there are a lot of Jews who actually lead the BDS movement. There was one article at Mondo Weiss, I think it was by Phil Weiss, where they went to some BDS meetings at some universities, and in some cases, Jewish students were the majority of the movement leading for the push for boycotting Israel. Because they hold these truths to be self-evident, that Palestinians are born equal to everybody else too. And so this is intolerable. Simple as that. That's why. And the New York Times has refused to explain that. So they'll have quotes from Israelis saying, this whole BDS thing is motivated by anti-Semitism. And they go, yeah, some say it's motivated by anti-Semitism. But, and then they haven't up until now noted that, oh yeah, by the way, there are hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of American Jews who are in on this project and are working very hard on it because it's the right thing to do. And it's not that they're motivated by hatred of themselves or anyone else. Give us a break. And that's, you know, I was referring to the controversy over Michael Oren's book. The reason that he's angered so many very prominent liberal Zionist defenders of the Israeli state is because he refuses to accept the possibility that their criticism of the occupation is based on anything other than weird psychological reasons, right? Obama has a weird hang-up with his Muslim father, and that's why he hates Israel so much. Yeah, right. And all of these American, prominent American liberal Zionist writers, well, you know, they have whatever weird psychological reasons that couldn't possibly have anything to do with them actually just breaking out a calculator and looking at how untenable it is that Israel has already de facto annexed all of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and are a minority or right on the edge of being a minority ruled country. Not just Jim Crow, but under minority rule. And that is untenable for the long term. Oh, no, no. Ah, what? The greatest defenders of Israel in American media don't have a point at all about what they actually say when they criticize Israel. No, they just have these, you know, childish psychological reasons that they need to get over, Oren has said. Well, and of course, that has, you know, really is what's responsible for all this backlash. He could have made some pathetic argument against a two-state solution and just left it at that, but he had to make it all personal and say that all of these most I mean, you're thinking of Thomas Friedman. Michael Oren is saying that Thomas Friedman is an anti-Semite. I mean, are we done here yet or what? What is this? This is stupid. And so that's what is the consensus at the Jewish Daily Forward and, well, and all over. I'm sorry, I don't have all the ones in front of me anymore, do I? Here I do. Somewhere I do. Patronizing Israeli crap. So we got the Jewish Daily Forward and Jeffrey Goldberg, even at the Atlantic, can't help it. Thomas Friedman. And there are more that I'm leaving out. But more and more American liberal Zionists are siding with at least the same position as the BDS movement and the occupation. Free Palestine. Give them independence. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Here live on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time, LRN.FM. And our next guest on the show today is Judge Andrew Napolitano from Fox News. Finally, glad to finally have you on the show, Judge. Welcome.
Pleasure to be back with you, Scott. All the best to you, my friend.
Yeah, it's good that I can return the favor. You interviewed me on your TV show back a couple of times in 2010 and 11. About WikiLeaks and about actually opposition to the war in Libya back when it happened. And boy, do you have a scoop along those lines in your syndicated column this week. It's running at lourockwell.com today and at antiwar.com as well. It's called Hillary's Secret War. And it's about some of the paperwork that you guys got a hold of in relation to the Hillary Clinton emails. Is that right?
Yeah, this is really a fascinating treasure trove, and it began long before we even knew anything about her emails. One of my colleagues, who's the senior executive producer and chief investigative producer around here by the name of Pamela Brown, stumbled upon an arms dealer who was indicted by the federal government for selling arms to Qatar without a license, even though, in fact, he did have the license, and it was given by both the State Department and the Treasury Department. And he was willing to go on camera, and he did for many, many hours. And in the course of that interview, and this is all substantiated by affidavits that he signed in the criminal case, as well as emails that he produced, in the course of that interview, he revealed what a lot of people have been hinting about and whispering about and suspecting for a while, and that is a cabal between President Obama, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and about 10 or 11 members of Congress, certain people in the West Wing, the Treasury Department, the State Department, Justice Department, and the CIA, to funnel American arms to rebels in Syria in the hopes that they would topple President Assad, and in Libya in the hopes that they would, and as we know, they did, along with NATO's immoral and unlawful and unconstitutional bombs, topple Colonel Gaddafi. Unfortunately for Mrs. Clinton and company, she was not very careful about the rebel groups to whom the arms were distributed. So the scheme worked like this: legitimate, lawful, fair market value sales of billions of dollars worth of arms from American arms dealers to the government of Qatar. Then, at the instruction of the State Department, the distribution of these arms, some for value, some for barter, some for free, to a variety of rebel groups and terrorist organizations, several of which are sworn enemies of the United States and are on the State Department's list. So how could the same State Department that bans the sales of these goods also authorize them. Well, there we get to a Secretary of State who was running a secret State Department within the State Department and running a secret war that was even kept from the Pentagon and from about 95% of the members of Congress. Mm-hmm. This began to unravel when some of the arms that she caused to be sold ended up in the hands of people who assassinated the U.S. ambassador, Chris Stevens, to Libya, and three of his colleagues who were there to protect him. Now, it is a criminal offense for anybody, whether the president of the United States or a disaffected ISIS wannabe in Minnesota, to provide material assistance to a government, to a terrorist organization. The Justice Department under President Bush and President Obama have prosecuted people for conspiring to do that and for attempting to do it. Well, this was beyond a conspiracy and an attempt. This was the actual successful delivery of material assistance to terrorist organizations under color of law in such a way that many people benefited financially along the way.
Now, to be specific there, you're saying, or are you saying that even if Obama signed a presidential finding ordering the CIA to engage in this operation and to create this system of plausible deniability where we'll funnel the guns through Qatar in order to clean them up, to launder them before we send them to the Mujahideen in Libya. If that was official policy, you're saying it's still criminal and against the law as long as the law says that if they're on the terrorist list, you cannot do that.
Absolutely. I mean, the president can't. One of the reasons we fought a war against King George III, the president can't exempt himself from the law. I mean, and he is exposed to prosecution once he leaves office, as she is exposed to prosecution now. I even, with a little bit of whimsy, opine that one of the reasons she, in this column, that she wants to become president is so that she can pardon herself. The court has said the pardoning power is absolute. And though no president, as far as we know, has ever pardoned himself, it probably would be lawful and constitutional. But beyond her material assistance, the terrorist organizations, was her material misleading of Congress under oath before the Senate Armed Services Committee. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's not in the column. The chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, presiding over the hearing at the time she was interrogated by Senator Rand Paul when she lied to him, is one of the conspirators in this scheme. So he knew what the truthful answers were, and he didn't say a word. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Senator Rand Paul knew at the time he asked the questions. I don't know if he just stumbled upon something and asked the right question, or if he really knew the background that we have since discovered. Mm-hmm. But he basically said, did you in any way, I'm paraphrasing now, facilitate the delivery of U.S. arms to countries and groups, terrorist or otherwise, in the Middle East, and she denied knowledge of it. That was a blatant and outright lie. She and her political designee in the State Department approved the thousands of deliveries, literally thousands. They issued over 86,000 licenses in this time period. We're talking about 09 to 12. And billions of dollars worth of equipment. There's some dispute about whether she was under oath when she made this statement. Often members of the president's cabinet are not required to take the oath because they don't want to be seen with their hand up like mobsters used to when they had the Kefauver hearings in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter under the law. The crime for misleading Congress is the same crime as perjury. The punishment is the same. It's 5 years per lie. As we know, the famous baseball pitcher Roger Clemens was prosecuted for lying to Congress when he was not under oath. So,
and she could have said, well, that's not exactly right, but we'll have to go to closed session for me to explain to you why you're wrong. But she chose to not do that, to affirmatively
lie. The chairman
lie.
Of the committee chose not to correct her. So, like often happens when the witness is collaborating with either the interrogator, not the case here because it's Rand Paul, or the chair of the committee was the case here, there was no correction. So she knew the truth. The chair of the committee knew the truth. Senator Paul didn't know the truth but suspected the truth. and she chose to let the lie stay out there. I don't know if she'll ever be prosecuted, but the public has the right to know this because she's holding herself out as the likely Democratic nominee for president.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because on the right, mostly Benghazi itself and the lack of security and the lack of rescue and this kind of thing has been the big scandal. But, of course, it's in the context, as you're describing, of a war that America fought for its enemies, for the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and Ansar al-Sharia, who are basically, I think, according to the State Department, the Libyan veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Absolutely.
Who had come home from Iraq War II back to Libya to overthrow Gaddafi.
Absolutely. And look, the Libyan result is a catastrophe. Chaos, murder, mayhem, no government order whatsoever. A country run by mobs and gangs and tribes and militia. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. I don't think she intended for this to happen, but she caused it to happen. People are presumed to intend the natural and probable consequences of their behavior. Was there a congressional declaration of war? Of course not. Was there a congressional vote, some sort of a less-than declaration of war, but authorization nevertheless, like George W. Bush got in October of 01? No. Is there any statute under which she and the president can do this? No. Was there any outrage on the part of the 95% of Congress that didn't know about this? Silence.
All right, y'all. That's the great Judge Andrew Napolitano from Fox News. First time I've ever had him on the show. I'm glad I finally did have you on. Thank you, Judge.
All the best, Scott.
All right, check out his spotlight today on antiwar.com, Hillary's Secret War.